You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, as mentioned, today we're talking about the impact of technology on the field of architecture. Technology has changed nearly everything about the way that people in society exist and function, from smartphones to the internet. And I think we're already talking about the Internet of Things and all that, the fourth and fifth industrial revolution. Technology has transformed the world in just a few decades' time. I mean, go back 10 years. We have things today that were not there 10 years ago, and one might even argue that perhaps we didn't even know ourselves 10 years ago until technology came to the picture. Now, for architects, home builders, and home designers, technology has taken a front seat in the experience of designing and building a structure. And we are joined by Themba Lwethu, who is in studio to talk to us about that. Mhlekazi, good evening.
Good evening, Thapelo. Thank you for the invite.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
And you? Fantastic, fantastic. How was your day? I always ask my guests how their day was. Because, you know, since we work at night, and so it'd be great to know how your day was.
Yeah, it's been a good day, pretty productive. I mean, in an architect's life, if you produce drawings and issue them out to clients or other consultants, that's productive.
You've done your job.
You've done my bit for today.
No, that's really interesting. Now, take us back a little bit. Why did you get into this field? Is it something that you really wanted to do from a young age?
Yeah, very interesting is that I think from as far back as maybe when I was, I'd say maybe like 9, 10 years old, I just picked up the pencil and my hand would move.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I wasn't that great an artist.
Yeah.
So I always felt I would probably maybe go into graphic design or that sort of thing. But as I grew a bit older, my love for buildings and how buildings were put together, I would always get excited when I would see a new building come up. There would be a sort of an interest on the inside.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think that's where the love for architecture started.
Do you know which building or the first building that you looked at and you're like, wow, I want to do this. Like, I think I know, I'm sure that I want to do this.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're taking me back.
I'm sure there must be some skyscraper somewhere in Sentinel, like, yo, this building. But I know a lot of people, for instance, some of my friends that come from the rural areas, that's the first thing they see when they come to Joburg. Yo, these buildings, they're so tall and all that.
Yeah, so I grew up in Bulawayo in Zimbabwe. And yeah, there were a few buildings there, especially in the CBD that I would see ever so often. And yeah, they just generated an interest, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. I don't know a few people who at 7 years, 9 years are already, you know, interested in their fields. I mean, if you ask most people, will say, 9 years I wanted to be a policeman. Because that's the only things we are exposed to, you know, as black people mainly. And so to get into this field, how difficult is it to get into architecture?
So architecture, if you like look at it, it's both an art and a science.
Okay.
So the advice I generally give to the high school students, like especially when they're sort of matriculating, is I advise them to enjoy the maths, to enjoy the physics, as well as then on the other side, on the artistic side, they need to explore their artistic sort of influences. That
wait, are you saying that for architecture there's maths and physics?
There's a little bit of everything.
Okay, so there you go.
Yeah.
If maths is not your friend.
There's a little bit. So the best way I would describe it is that when you arrive in architecture school in first year, your lecturer will will generally tell you, you know, there's that old saying, jack of all trades and the master of none.
Yeah.
But at architecture school, they'll tell you, you are the jack of all trades and the master of all.
So they flip the coin.
so you need a little bit, an understanding, I would say, of the maths and physics, because you deal with structures. So you're going to also interact with the engineers.
Yeah.
And because you are the master builder, if I could call it that, you need to have a good understanding of what it is that, you know, these engineers are actually going to be working on.
Mm.
And then obviously the artistic side, your mind generates ideas, and you generally then have to translate what's happening, those ideas that are being formulated in your mind.
Yeah.
Your hand must now do the work.
Yeah.
You know, that was when we were starting out, we used our hands to to sketch and bring our ideas to life.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's why that maths is very important.
You can't run away from it. With, yeah. You can't run away from the maths.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. So there you go. If you're a young person looking to get into architecture, you can't run away from the maths as well. What was your first drawing once you left university?
Once I left university, I worked for a practice in Harare.
Yeah.
And the building that we were working on at that time would have been, I think it was a university campus.
Yeah.
It was quite a massive project I had the opportunity to get exposed to in that practice that I worked in. Yeah, so it was some buildings, actually a group of buildings on a university campus that the practice was working on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's really interesting. And I suppose when you go past it every time, you're like, hey, I did something there.
Well, when you're a junior, you almost just you put your fingerprint. There are others whose fingerprints appear to be much bigger than yours on those drawings.
And you have to sit there and like, okay, but at least I contributed something.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. So you're happy for the opportunity to be exposed to a project like that. But I think I was fortunate a year later, the practice that I then joined when I relocated to South Africa, I worked at OR Tambo International Airport. So that entire airport upgrade in readiness for 2010. So I was stationed at OR Tambo.
Ah.
So that's where the office was.
Yeah.
And it also generated an excitement in me for aeroplanes because I used to see aeroplanes.
Don't tell me
you
wanted to design aeroplanes now.
I think the science and physics of how this massive, you know, piece of machinery or equipment.
Yeah.
How it gets up from the ground and how does it stay in the air?
Yeah, you know, as massive as it is.
Exactly.
Sure. No, that's interesting. That's interesting. Okay, let's talk about architecture then and juxtaposing it to, I suppose, technology. What has been, in your experience, the role of technology in architecture? What has changed?
So if you look back, if you Google and you say the world's greatest architects who ever lived, and you go back to maybe just after the 1900s, and you start sort of following the history.
Mm.
Architects generally have always drawn by hand.
Okay, okay.
And generate those ideas, like I was saying earlier, that translate whatever's happening in your mind and use your hand to then communicate.
Mm.
We are communicators of ideas.
Yeah.
But as technology started coming in slowly, architects then started drawing with computers.
Mm.
And my generation of architects is one that has been fortunate in that we've had the best of both worlds. Mm. So in my early years, I would say the first 3 years of my study, we conceptualized and drew everything by hand. But once we got into the work environment and at the tail end of our studying, because architecture is, you study for a long time. You take 6 years to study. So it's almost like you're a doctor.
Yeah.
But at the tail end, sort of fifth and sixth year, we got exposed to computers and we began to be able to formulate and draw with the computer. So the computer-aided design. And it has developed tremendously, especially over the last 15 years, I would say, because the thrust initially, even on the computer-aided design, was that you drew two-dimensionally.
Okay.
So you drew lines and you almost had to then, by hand, sketch out what the building would look like in three-dimensional form. But that three-dimensional aspect now has developed tremendously that, for example, if a client comes into our office and they want a house to be designed, they almost no longer just want to see how the plan looks like. They want to see how the house is going to look like.
Yeah.
How is it going to look in relation to their neighbor, the streets, what's, you know, that sort of thing. So technology has really sort of captivated the way that we do things. We almost can no longer work without it. And as the software that we use continues to develop, I think it's only going to enhance how we present and how we work as architects. Technology for us is a very good friend.
Makes sense.
We embrace technology because it only makes our work easier. The challenge that drawing by hand, the biggest disadvantage that it gave architects was because architecture is a design process, and design is what I would use the word, there are iterations. So it's an iterative process. So there are changes.
Sure. So when there's a change, you need to,
when there's a change, you need to come. And if you're drawing by hand, and we by hand, I don't mean with pencil.
Okay.
So the pencil is for sketching. The drawings that eventually you give to the builder, we used to use ink.
Sure.
And we used to draw on tracing paper.
Yes, yes, yes.
So if you then have to make changes, you now have to take a razor blade and or start the drawing all over again.
All over again, yeah.
But now with technology, we're able to do changes in a more efficient way. And there's certain aspects about drawing where you need to draw the same thing repeatedly. So technology has allows for that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Tell me about that transition there. I want to go back to that because I'm sure it must have, in some sort of way, caused a shock, especially for the generation of architects that were before that technological changes and those advancements. And now they have to reskill, or I don't know what they need to do, upgrade or whatever. But what has been your experience with those era of architects, I suppose, as to now needing to move? Because I mean, no one is going to go to an architectural person that still uses a pencil in this day and age.
Exactly.
So that transition, how was it?
It was quite challenging for most of, I'd say, the generation that's perhaps ahead of us. They struggled with the transition.
Yeah.
Because here they were having these young people who are coming out of the universities and, you know, technicons, as they called them at the time. And they now had a grip of how to use a computer. But the mindset shift is because they never understood how would the computer make you more efficient at that time. So and the flip side as well was that the computer coming in or the software coming in could have created this impression that oh, so do you just press a button and
things happen.
And all of a sudden the printer starts bringing out the drawing. So there was that period where that adjustment needed to take place. There were a few who were very excited and learned how to use the software, while there was also a group who were initially shunning the technology and believing that their hand and their heads were still, those were their tools of the trade. But so they kept that aspect, but would then have to pass the drawings on to a person who's sitting on a computer so that, you know, management of changes is easier and it's the process of producing information is more efficient.
Did it mean some architectural person then, if you don't change, you lose your job? Because I think that's the biggest impact of technology in most industries. You can take the banking sector, for instance. Up until a couple of years ago, we didn't know that you can get your bank statement on the on the teller outside. And then some tellers lost a lot of their jobs. I remember when FNB, you know, first instituted that, thousands of bank tellers lost their jobs because now the machine outside can do a whole lot more. In fact, today, if you go to a bank and you say, I want a bank statement, like, huh?
Yeah.
Who's going to give you a bank statement? Because you can get this thing on your app or even outside, you know?
So you're in the wrong place.
You're in the wrong place. Do you have maybe 100,000 to deposit? Maybe there we can talk, because there you might need. By the way, why are you carrying 100,000? So you run into all these sort of things because technology has made it a little bit easier to do that. But the unintended of it is that unless you reskill, you would be out of a job, out of business. That transition, did it cause any job losses there?
Not that I'm aware of, but what would have probably happened is that those colleagues who wouldn't have transitioned quick enough would probably, they would only be limited to doing a specific portion of the work.
Ah, I see.
Or instead of working on the actual drawing production, they would maybe come at the tail end when the building is now under construction on site, because they have the knowledge and the know-how of how the design has been formulated within the practice. Then we send them to site to say, you go and become the people that actually monitor the supervise the construction process. There you don't need to be as tech savvy, because you are using your eyes.
Yes, you're looking at this thing like, it's not going the way it's supposed to be going.
Absolutely.
Okay, talk about then, I mean, you alluded to time that's being saved by these softwares and technology. The average time, what has been the difference? If you were to do it, an average drawing, would it like an hour thing, 2 hour thing, but with technology, 30 minutes, I'm done, type of a thing.
I would say... In my experience, I think technology has had a tremendous, impact on cutting down the time.
Yeah.
I would say maybe by even 2/3.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's
that's huge.
It's huge, because some of the things that we are able to do now, we would. Could take us a week to do, but we can do them in a day, you know. So it has improved our efficiencies. That said, we are able to do more things, because of the time that we and the capabilities of the technology as well. And the better you master the technology, then you are able to really harness everything that it provides you.
One of the things they say about technology is that as it reduces time and such dependencies, it makes the whole thing cost effective. But y'all are very expensive, let's be honest.
We are.
Why do you guys charge us so much money? Like I said, I have a friend and I would see him, he's busy throwing these things. And then comes out the invoice, I'm like, ah, my guy, let's be honest though, you're ripping these people off.
So the cost that you pay the architect,
yeah,
I would liken it to perhaps the money that you pay the doctor.
Okay.
So you are paying for the expertise.
Okay.
And with architects, you're also paying for his responsibility, because once he designs a building, he becomes responsible.
Okay.
For that building, okay. Whatever happens, yes, he involves engineers and quantity surveyors and all other built environment professionals.
Mm.
But generally, go back to that first phrase.
Yeah.
You are the jack of all trades and you are the master of all as the architect. So it rises and falls on you as the architect.
Mm.
So you're somewhat, you're paying, it's like an insurance policy that you're paying.
So if there's something on a building that you designed and some structural faults are found, God forbid some become fatalities, are we saying that architects, we should go back to them?
Depending on the nature of the of the fault.
Yeah.
Yes, the architect could be liable, or the structural engineer.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So it will now be...
So that's what we're paying for.
That's what I'm saying.
For you putting your head on the block that this thing will
exactly.
work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sure. That makes sense. That makes sense. I get it. But yeah, it seems like time is something that has been reduced by the availability of technology then to make things much easier.
Absolutely.
Are there preferred softwares without necessarily naming them? You know, they must pay us first for airtime. But obviously there's certain systems that work better. And I'm asking this because obviously the transition to using better software is in itself an impact, right? That
Absolutely.
Might take time. There are some that work, some that didn't work, but I'm sure now the industry is sitting at a place where there's certain softwares that are much better than others.
Yes, particularly like in South Africa, we have like two primary software suppliers, or to call them, that most architects will use one or the other.
Yeah.
There's a few other ones, but they are not so popular.
Yeah.
I mean, these two primary ones are like tried and trusted, and the developers of the software are either in America or in Europe, and they've got pour huge amounts of money into research and development. And every year, the software is now like a cell phone app.
Yes, vision what?
Exactly, and you keep getting pop-ups on your screen to say, "Oh, please do an update."
Mm.
So you update, and your software runs more efficiently, and then you get one massive update that happens once every year, where you are using now the latest version of that software, and they've improved certain aspects, which is all meant to improve your efficiency, improve your ability to collaborate with others who are using the same software, especially engineers and other, you know, built environment professionals.
Yeah. You're raising a very important point there when you're saying, you know, some of these systems come from America, Europe, and all that. Let's talk about Africa now.
Sure.
Do we have that, or we are still lagging behind the technology in the rest of the world?
We're still lagging behind, unfortunately.
Sure.
Yeah, we haven't. I mean, maybe I haven't been looking hard enough, but I haven't come across any sort of homegrown or continent-grown software that professionals would have developed.
What's the problem? Do we not have talent architectural talent here in South Africa, Africa. You work with these things every day. I'm sure you could say there's a glitch here, there's a glitch there type of a thing.
And absolutely.
You could come up with our own things.
We're constantly complaining.
Yeah. So there you go. You could already start there because, I mean, you're solutioning to your problem, right?
We always have these bright sparks and ideas. Why can't they do
this?
Yes,
exactly. So what's stopping the architectural people in the sector in Africa to, I suppose, be at the forefront of this thing?
That's a very good question. My understanding is that the development of this software is primarily a programming thing. So the architects would only really come in back end.
Yeah.
Because the people that are developing it are mostly coders and developers that are doing this thing.
Yeah.
And they would then probably just consult a few architects or engineers and say, oh, you've always done things this way. Don't you think this would maybe make things a little easier for you guys? So, perhaps somebody out there is listening.
Yeah, a software developer is
software
listening.
Developer.
We've given you a business business idea. There you go. Maybe you can just take that and think. But I find it very sad. I mean, if you think about technology, and every single week, the one theme is that Africa is lagging. Africa is lagging in whatever you look at.
Absolutely.
You know, cars, architecture, all the different industries that we've been looking at over the past few weeks. Africa is just behind and sad.
Yeah, we need to find ways and means to incentivize our young people as well as those specialists in those in these technological trades so that they feel like if they come up with an idea they'll be able to they'll be takers for it because we've seen so many people doing, have inventions, but the most that we'll ever see is it'll just be viral for, we'll pass it around on social media and say, wow, this looks amazing.
Yeah.
But when the rubber is meant to hit the road, you never see that product take off and actually become used on the African continent. So I'm not really sure who must carry the weight of providing the funding and the investment so that if somebody was to develop something, that there's actually takers and perhaps even somebody who would be able to rubber stamp the development and say, yes, this is actually of good quality.
Sure. Now, I was listening to some other podcast. Someone was saying that if you go to the East, you go to the West, the whatever other parts of the world, when you ask business people and some of these governments, they see growth in Africa. So in other words, that's why America is fighting to be here. China is fighting to be here in Africa.
True, true.
But you are saying that everyone else sees growth in Africa, but we don't see growth in ourselves, And literally everyone is, we're almost like two bulls fighting here in Africa, and we are all just spectators, and we're seeing things happening, to us, without us, and we are the target growth for the next coming few years. I mean, think about it. The world's population is aging, and Africa is the youngest population.
By
2030.
So
exactly,
yes.
Statistics say 2030 will have the youngest population in the world. And these are people who are supposed to be leading technology. These are people who are supposed to be at the forefront of these things and saying, how do we position Africa to become a leader? And we have the potential to be there. When they want to do nice wedding bands, where do they go? They go to Africa. Come and get gold here and diamonds and everything.
That's
beneficiate
true.
This thing and bring it back to us. And then we wear these wedding rings and all that. They came here. But you go to that other store, you pay thousands of rands for something. So it's almost like we are not applying ourselves as Africans. Everyone sees growth in us, but we don't see growth in ourselves. And so I'm saying it's very sad that every Tuesday, that's almost like the common theme. But anyways, I hope that developers and people who have influence are listening to us, and we can take these sort of conversations going forward.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the relationship then between architecture, technology, and sustainability. And the sustainability question, by the way, is my area of interest.
Wow. Okay.
I was actually reading a report the other, it must be early this year, where these leading car brands, you know, the one with four rings and the one that's called Be My Wife, you know, you know, and the other one that has a surname as well. They're all projecting that by 2030, they want to do away with fossil fuel cars from a sustainability point of view. So Africa, again, is going to be left behind because we'll still be using fossil fuel cars when the rest of the world is using technology, you know, and using much greener cars.
Yeah,
I drove last year to Harry Smith and Jaguar has at the garage there something to charge Jaguar cars that are using electric water. So we are clearly being left behind when the rest of the world is going forward from a sustainability point of view. But how do you see the relationship between these three, and what would be sustainability going forward for the architectural space?
So with the advent of artificial intelligence, AI, which has also sort of just exploded over the last 12, 18 months in many spheres.
Yeah.
Architecture hasn't been left behind.
Yeah.
And over the last, call it 15 years maybe, worldwide now, we have seen an awakening by architects and built environment professionals to become more sustainable with when producing buildings.
Yeah.
What AI is able to do now, either as a plug-in into these software programs that we are using, or in some instances, even as standalone, because we've also seen new software sort of come into into play that previously we did not know of because of AI.
Yeah.
There are so many tools that one has access to in terms of, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Let's say we want to build an office building on a particular plot of land, maybe it's in Pretoria.
Mm.
When we start drawing that project, we are able to geolocate the building, right? Put it on its actual coordinates.
Really? That's interesting.
Absolutely.
Even before it's there.
Even before it's there.
Oh,
so
my.
Now, with AI and with plugins, I am able to determine how the sun moves on that particular piece of land.
Yeah. That's interesting.
What the prevailing wind direction is doing. So once I've designed the building, I am also able to determine how energy efficient that building is going to be. You know, like with the windows, in which direction they must face to make the building more energy efficient. I can do a sun study. I can do the wind simulation. I can do all those things. AI has also started giving people the opportunity to now determine the type of materials that they can actually put on the building, materials that are eco-friendly, that are sustainable. Because for us in the built environment, sustainability looks at thermal comfort for because we design buildings for people.
Yeah.
They are not for robots or for machines. So we use the technology to design the building so that the users of the building are comfortable.
Mm.
But what does comfort actually mean? Because you're looking at thermal comfort. Mm. It means the building is cool in summer and it's warm in winter.
Yeah.
That way you reduce your reliance on air conditioning. By reducing your reliance on air conditioning, your electricity bill comes down.
So are you saying here in studio you're spending money on this aircon that's on right now? Yeah, so there you go. They are listening.
So it's a whole, I mean, one door opens and unlocks another.
Yeah.
You know, that it's a cycle. And it's incredible how we've seen technology being able to actually change the way you had initially perceived your building to be because you are wanting to be sustainable.
Sure, that's interesting. So you're able to say to your client, this thing is going to save you energy in this way and that way and that way. If
100%.
You do it like this, then this is what it's going to. You even move the sun, that's what you're saying.
You know, I'm able to simulate that in summer when the sun rises, this is how much sun is going to come into your room.
And
we can actually see the light filtering into that particular room. And I can show you as a client and say, and then you can say, oh, I want more sun. So I'm going to make the opening slightly bigger or I need less sun.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
The
way it becomes interesting is with the heat gain. So I can, by adjusting the type of glass that you would use on your window or sliding door, will determine how warm or how cool your room, your internal temperatures are going to be.
Sure. That's really interesting. Where do you see then the changes coming in the near 5-10 years in the space?
So what's beautiful about South Africa is that the SABS, South African Bureau of Standards, they've already begun to implement that with every building plan that gets submitted. We need to see that you have made an attempt in your design to be energy efficient. So that's going to become legislated, that every plan that gets passed must have X energy efficiency.
Yeah. You know. So what happens to us? We have old houses that the designers never thought about energy efficiency. So we are the ones that are causing load shedding, yeah?
We are going to gently encourage you to change your windows and insulate your walls.
I would like to see that discussion. It's going to be very interesting. Lastly, let's talk about Do you see the entire process as in you design this thing? I mean, you've just talked about a beautiful designed house that's energy efficient and you can do those simulations and all that. As architects, do you sit and see the whole building being done? Or, hey, I've designed this thing for you. This is that. Bye-bye. That's my end.
We encourage the clients to engage us for the full service. So for us, a full service means that we divide it into 6 work stages, we call them work stages. So where stage one is the initiation, that's where we meet with the client and we get an understanding of their brief. And stage 5 is actually us supervising construction, engaging with their contractors. And then at stage 6 is where we would collect certification from all the people that have been involved with the project. What we are essentially saying is that at the end of your project, we want to proudly stand next to you and say the building has been built according to the drawings and specifications. Because if we don't get involved in that final, those 2 final stages, construction and closeout, we can't guarantee that your builder has built in the manner in which we intended.
I see.
Because sometimes with some clients, you find that while you are designing and now refining the design and producing drawings for the municipality, finally getting approval, when they now start construction, if you are not there, they begin to ask questions that, why did the architect specify this? This is very expensive.
And you're not there.
And I'm not there. So I can't justify why I have specified this particular aspect.
Yeah.
And for most clients, it becomes a financial thing.
Yeah.
But I'm probably specifying it because it's a functional, something that will work well.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a type of waterproofing that will ensure that their roof is watertight. But if I'm not involved, then I'm not able to justify certain things.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, as we wrap it up, any final thoughts to our listeners maybe, and then maybe to young people who want to get into this space as well?
I would say that if to those that are intending on building or want to do renovations to their houses and things like that, please employ an architect.
Yeah.
You will, it's well worth it to have an architect on your side to help you, you know, walk that journey. Mm. And to young people, I would say this is it's a rewarding profession. It's hard work.
Mm.
So don't look at it from a final product that you see. What goes into it is
hard work.
Is blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. So it's initially the training.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Mm.
Probably the most overworked students at varsities are architectural students.
There you go. You're ready for that.
It's long nights.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah.
But it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. There's nothing as beautiful as seeing the work of your hands being built and brought to life.
Mm. It's
a heartwarming feeling.
Yeah. Walking past that building, like, I designed this.
Absolutely.
And if you had the opportunity to even oversee and supervise being constructed, it's even much bigger. Lastly, did you design your house?
No, not.
So do you walk around the house and like, hey, I know.
I'm in the process.
Okay. Because there's a certain way in which you want it, right?
Yes.
That's where I was going. But I think it makes sense that it would be your obsession to say, because we walk into ours and like, okay, it's still here. The building hasn't fallen down. So, but I'm sure you have a different eye at looking at the design of the houses and all that. So there's a certain way in which you want them. Yeah, look at that. Yes. Like, yes.
Definitely.
That makes sense. But thank you so much, man, for joining us this evening.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for the
really
invite.
Appreciate your time. It is a part one. I was telling my producer, it might be part two coming. But I do think there's quite a lot that we need to unpack. But I was quite excited by the artificial intelligence discussion. And there we need to really explore that a little bit further. But yeah, it's quite interesting what AI is doing in different industries.
It's mind-blowing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. Thembale Tumoyo joining us this evening to tell us a little bit about the impact of technology in the field of architecture.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.